Deutschlandfunk. Corso. Kunst und Pop.
Roll Pack, the film is full of really interesting comments, theses and ideas. One of them is, for example, all wars led by the US recur on the wars against the Native Americans. Is this historical period of the wars against the Native Americans a kind of fall of man in the US history?
The past and the present is two elements that are totally mixed together. The Americans have always tried to put their history in a context of peace, of innocence, of a country that was totally deserted. Nobody lived there. Only a few savages were there. But it's a history of violence. On the continent, north and south, there were almost 100 million people. And within a century, less than a century, more than 90% of them were dead. So it's a genocide. You can't build the biggest democracy on earth on a genocide, or at least not acknowledging that genocide and reclaim some sort of purity. It's totally incomprehensible. And the second genocide is slavery. And the slavery is not only the source of every wealth in the United States, but also the wealth of Europe. Without the many slaves in the U.S., first with sugar, which was the first incredible riches that was created, and that also changed Europe. And the second aspect is cotton. Cotton is at the source of the Industrial Revolution. So you see that all those stories are connected. But today, the attitude is to disconnect every part of history. So, of course, people are lost. They don't see, what it means for them today, like in a country like Germany, what it means. Most Germans don't even know that Germany had colonies in South Africa. So it's really, unfortunately, a story that we retain only piece of it, and the piece written by the conquerors.
Let's go a little bit back to this wars on the Native Americans. Right after pictures of the war against the Native Americans, you show recent pictures of the raid on Osama bin Laden and pictures of U.S. weapons. Bin Laden, he was called Geronimo, and the military aircraft are called Apache or Chinook and so on. So the early wars are still a fundamental part of the U.S.-American identity?
Of course. You see how it is transcribed in words, in methods, in structure. To change how we behave toward other people, to change racism, to change white supremacies is an incredible complex task, because it's not just a matter of being conscious of it. It's a matter of even your vocabulary. By example, that all helicopters and planes in the U.S. Army, they have Indian names. My American friends, they didn't realize that until they saw it in the film. We get used about those terminology, and we know how much terminology is also our instrument for ideology and for history. And it just permeates your life without you really conscious of it.
The narration of your film, the text and tone and the pictures, could be, in my sense, described as an extremely bitter comment or even an accusation, I think. Does this film appear very emotional and powerful? How much anger did you feel?
I wouldn't say bitter or angry. On the contrary, it's a peaceful voice in a way that, like an elder would speak to you, an elder that has gone through a lot of history, through a lot of experience. At that stage, you cannot be bitter. Sometimes, yes, I can be angry, not bitter, because bitter would be against my own person, against my own body. And I do not want to do that. I know too much today to not see myself as another victim. my intent is to just lay all the history on the table and put every spectator in front of this reality, in front of these facts, because they are facts. The film is based not only on three strong books by scholars, but also each one of those scholars are people that I know and who has put all their life in those books. You know, Sven Lindqvist is somebody who has traveled around the world, who know every continent. And the book he wrote is the result of more than 60 years of life.
Yeah, the title of your film is a quote of one of his famous books, right?
Exactly. Michel Rolf-Trouillot is an incredible scholar. Roxane has a lifetime in being involved in indigenous history and also policy. She was always involved in the movements. And myself, this film is not just the result of the work of a few years, like the last 3 years on the film project. As you can see in the film, it's my life story as well. It's the whole story of my work. I feel very at ease with presenting this film, you know, with no anger, with maybe a sense of responsibility and hope that people will understand what it is about. It's personal for me, but it should be personal for them as well.
But did your last work, I'm Not Your Negro, leave you a little bit with the feeling this wasn't enough? There is still a lot to say?
Yes. I had the chance to travel with I Am Not Your Negro throughout Europe, throughout the Americas. Even I went to Australia, from Sweden to Italy, to Brazil. In all those places, there have been extraordinary discussions. And the good part is that mostly people were able to translate the film in their own history. In Brazil, the history of racism is obvious. In Australia, people really discuss most of the time the history of their own genocide of the Aborigines. In Italy, they discuss their colonial past. In France, that was a little bit different because France still thinks of itself as an imperium. And the denial was probably one of the strongest places because one of the attitudes, especially from certain journalists, was to say, oh my God, these Americans, they are so racist, so violent. And they thought of that as a specific American problem. Whereas Baldwin is an incredible humanist and universal thinker and never talk only about America. He, on the contrary, he speaks a lot about human being, about what it means to be a human being.
Exactly. In this movie, you say this is not only happening in the US, it's all over the world. Is Exterminate All the Brutes a film about the dark soul of mankind?
Yes, it is. It is. Because there have been choices made throughout our common history that did not need to be taken like this. It was basically decision of power, decisions of war. And the most terrible part is the fact when Europe started to mystify weapon superiority with biological superiority, when Europe began to hierarchized race, which as we know today is not even a scientific concept. You know, we are all one race, the human race, period. But when Europe started to give notes on who was a savage and who was civilized, and it went all the way to the end of the 19th century, you know, that's this incredible thing. You know, it's not so much far back. It's recent. All racist theories were, in fact, developed into pseudo-scientific theory at the end of the 19th century. And you can see this other incredible drama is the Shoah, the Holocaust. In the middle of Europe, by a country and allies who we cannot say that were, you know, savages. They were highly sophisticated, highly educated but they were capable of genocide. That, for me, is, you know, press the question, you know, who we are as a human species. So when you see that it's beyond simply racism, you know, like this person is black, or the Jews were white, you know, but that doesn't help. They find another way to describe them, you know, to describe them with their nose, with their physical, but that's what every civilization did when they wanted to get rid of others. You know, they just start to call them animals and then insects. As soon as they were insects, you could get rid of them and kill them. So this is the history of the world, but it's a big difference when Europe, as a conqueror power, start to see itself as the center of the world. And that's a big difference. And the United States is just the follow-up of that. Because the American likes to see themselves as a new people, as the new world, as the innocents. But those were Europeans who came with their ideas of extermination with them.
At the very end, you conclude, there is no lack of knowledge. And there is a long break in the sentence. I was expecting let's say, there is no lack of knowledge, but... but can you finish this sentence?
No, because I didn't finish it, because we already used the sentence in the film. And I wanted to leave it open for whoever is watching it, answer it by himself or herself. There is no lack of knowledge, it's lack of consequences. Do we draw consequences about what we know?
Do we learn from history?
And do we learn from history, and what is our place in history, and what do we do today? Because, you know, it's like people who said, well, you know, I never had slaves, or I was never a Nazi, etc. But your life today is the consequence of that. You can't just say that, well, I am pure, I have nothing to do with it. You live in a society. That means you have to be part of that society and take it with all its history, bad and good, and see what are the consequences of that history on your life today. You know, when you see what we call so easily the refugee crisis, and you do not want to see where that comes from, you're just making it easy for you, but it's not reality. Reality is that crisis is the history of humankind. Humankind have always been in displacement. And when people have to flee their home because of war, because of a certain regime that has been totally supported by the West, because of the exploitation of those places, either because of oil or because of uranium, because of coltan, of everything else, of course it will have consequences to your life. You can't just use the iPhone and close your eyes about where the element of the iPhone comes from, because war is being waged in your name. Of course you can say, okay, but I'm here and I'm not part of it, I don't want to see it. But yes, but I'm sorry, it's there. You just need to go on the internet and you will see the stories, the images, and you will know, you will make the connection. Today it's too easy for people to say, well, I don't see the connection. But the connections are there all the time.
Can this confrontation cause maybe the opposite effect in the audience? The ones who want to, in brackets, teach the white, the privileged, the violent, turn around?
Well, now it's too late, you know. I'm not even sure we could even, there was a time where we could say that. It's just, as far as I'm concerned, I am tired to be polite. I'm tired to try to educate. All I know, I was not born with it. I learned it. You know, I learned it in school. I learned in Haiti. I learned it in school in France. I learned it in school in the U.S. I learned it in university in Berlin. And then I educate myself. I read many other books. I saw films. So there is nothing extraordinary in that. And I talk to people. I had friends in all those places. So why can't other people do the same? Why do you just sit on your couch and you say, well, please, Mr. Peck, educate me. And please don't use too much bad words because you should not make me scare. Or you? No, come on. People watch things that are so violent every day on TV and they can't face the truth. That's absurd. And by the way, the film is not aggressive. The film is just, I think it's the truth of the film that is hard to take. That's a big difference. I didn't make this film to be aggressive on anybody. The film itself is a search. It's an offer. You know, I offer you to understand what your life has become and where your life came from. That's the offer. If I had to make a war with people, I would take something else than making movies. Making movies is a way to open up the minds of people, to have a real discussion. And for a rare time, it's somebody like me telling the story. All my life, I live with other people telling me their story. My own story was never to see, to be heard or to be seen. Another example, you know, people ask me, yes, but the way you use all those images, etc., that's extraordinary. Yes, but I had to invent those images. They didn't exist. There was no critical black photographer during the colonization era to photograph what was happening in the way that I would today. So I had to deconstruct those images. I had to select those images. I wanted in this film to have as little as possible images of Indian, indigenous people, women, blacks, Arabs as victims. If you watch carefully, you will see most of this picture I choose, the person is looking to the camera, you know, and that's my way of trying to find a trace of humanity in those pictures. And to deprive them from their really obscene, very often violent images. And I did that as well for the Holocaust, you know, what images I choose. And then I try to explain the image. I don't just show them. I go behind the curtain of what those images mean. So it's really, there is not one piece of this film that was not carefully measured, thought about, reflect upon until I finished the film. Every word, every image, every sound of this film is very precise. People tend to watch film as a consumer. They just rapidly saw a film and then it's finished. This film is intended for you to watch it several times.
Yeah, rewatch
because
it.
There are so many things you won't see it by the first time. And it's an active participation. I do not make film where you just sit down and hear my story. I try to engage you. I try to have a response from you. Because the more you respond, the more you will get out of the film.
Well, another quote from the film, there is a monster behind the human mask. Raoul Peck, do you see any hope looking at the people, at the monsters in us right now?
Well, I never try to talk in terms of hope or being pessimist or optimist. What I always answer in that case, I always say, you know what? The future will be what we, all of us, do for it. You know, we are the one who need to decide what we want about the future. We are all actors. And those who are not actors and think that they are just, you know, they just are consumer, because that's what we see today everywhere. We have citizens who have become consumer. Meaning you consume, but you don't have to do anything. But that's a path to catastrophe. Everything going on right now, whether it's nature, the economy, whether it's poverty, the extreme polarization of discussion, etc., It's because a lot of people are more and more passive. And when I see the future, and that's why I end the film with the voice of the children, because if there is hope, it's that. But more than hope is they are active. You know, they don't hope. They are active. They are on the street. And a lot of people should be ashamed that children know much more than we adults. They understand much more that a 13-year-old young girl starts a hunger strike every Friday in front of a school.
Yeah, we hear the voice of Greta Thunberg, yes.
Yes, but I put a lot of other voice in many other different languages. It's incredible. You know, that's the only thing I really hang on about what is coming to us. But it should also tell us how shameful it is. And when I hear some politicians, you know, almost insulting Greta Thunberg, you know, like say, what does she think she is? She's a child, for God's sake. Is it the way you respond to a child's fear? And in fact, she's saying a lot of incredible things that are scientifically proven. What does it say about you? And that's an incredible time right now. So again, to answer your question, it's not so much about hope. It's about what are we collectively going to do? You know, the world has been built because people one day said, we want to change that. Every revolution, every comfort you have today, the fact that you have paid vacation, the fact that women can vote, the fact that you don't work 15 hours a day, all those people died for those rights. And we tend to forget that. So whatever the future is or will be, if we don't fight, there will be no future. That's as simple as that.
Thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.